having eyes but not seeing beauty, having ears but not hearing music, having minds but not perceiving truth, having hearts that are never moved and therefore never set on fire. These are things to fear.
Welcome.
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 To celebrate.
To celebrate.
Story.
Welcome to celebrate story.
With my mom.
My mom.
With my mom.
With my mom.
With my wife.
Julie Wagner.
Julie Wagner.
Julie Wagner.
Julie Wagner.
It was right after Christmas. I was doing my brand new paint-by-number kit. It had to be one of the most fun artistic toys I've ever gotten for Christmas. I typically pick up some small artsy hobby after Christmas. I'm usually craving a space to be creative after all the hustle and bustle of the holidays. So I was sitting at my podcast/creativity table and was doing this paint-by-number Vincent van Gogh Starry Night kit and working on it. And I really enjoyed it. It was the first time I ever did a paint-by-number that big. And you just fill in all these teeny tiny spaces of it. Seems like it must be 1,000 different little spaces that are like 22 different colors. And if you just follow, you know, each of your paint by number sections, then you can recreate your own masterpiece. And so I had a lot of fun doing this. It was kind of a relaxing, meditative experience. And then my kids were piling in and out on my bed behind me and watching a time-lapse video of two men building a house out of all natural materials they find in the wilderness. So it was very relaxing, very peaceful, very just the perfect vibe for me post-Christmas busyness. And so I'm painting and, you know, I'm like kind of getting a little obsessed about some of the little teeny tiny spaces that it didn't quite go right. And I'm realizing that like if I step back from this, you know, canvas, you can't even see those tiny little pieces, but I can start to see the tree take shape and like the swirling stars take shape. I'm like, wow, what a great metaphor of like when you look really close, you can see all these imperfections, but together all the pieces, if you just keep going, those tiny little imperfections do not matter. But if you stand back, you really can see the bigger picture. And I loved this. I was like, this to me is like the metaphor of puzzles and relationships. I've been working and playing with this metaphor of relationships are like puzzles, and that when I connect with someone else or when anyone connects with another person, you know, they together hold a view of things that they cannot hold on their own. It's like together, it's a two-person puzzle or a 10-person puzzle or, by the beauty of team, 1,000-piece puzzle, and that like everybody's piece matters. Because is there is anything worse than like doing 1,000-piece puzzle and not getting that last piece? And every piece is so significant when interlocked with the pieces around it. And together, you can see something that you cannot see by yourself. And I loved this. I loved thinking about relationships and puzzles and like all the tiny pieces, how they come together to make something beautiful. Well, I just enjoyed thinking through this. And I was listening to also podcasts on Vincent van Gogh. I mean, this is totally how this homeschool mother loves to have a good time, is to do some art and to listen to information about that art. This is how I roll. And of course, I should rewind a little bit, because the original inspiration was Steve and I and some good friends of ours went to the Vincent van Gogh experience right before Christmas. It was beautiful. It was like, it was truly immersive in his art. And so that was kind of one of the seeds for the inspiration. So anyways, I'm listening to two different podcasts. And one podcast, it was very informational. Very almost pitied Vincent van Gogh's life of what a tragedy it was, and you know, kind of concluded that his life was such a tragedy and a lack of success, because clearly they were defining success economically. Poor Vincent van Gogh, he'd only made a few hundred dollars on his art in his lifetime, had 3 failed attempts at romance, and you know, now his paintings sell for millions. What a tragedy. You know, and of course, I see that perspective. That's one piece of the puzzle, right? One perspective. But then I listened to another podcast that had Carol Berry as a guest. And she had taken a class by Henry Nouwen. And Henry Nouwen had done an entire class on looking at Vincent van Gogh as a saint and a leader in compassion and solidarity with those suffering. And so it was this that just completely opened my eyes, because here, this one podcast is looking at it as, oh, what a pitiful failure. And the other podcast is like, wow, what a saint and all that we can learn by the life of compassion that he lived. And I just loved hearing the different perspectives. And it reminded me of this puzzle metaphor. We all have a different piece to tell this larger story. Well, I, at that point, was going head in to just a rabbit trail of research on Vincent van Gogh, because I wanted to get more perspectives and more information. And the most captivating story for me was his work that he was hired by the Belgium Evangelical Association to go and be a minister to those that needed to hear the gospel in the mines. And what was interesting is this was actually an attempt, because he wanted to go to school to learn to be a minister, but he was very uninspired with learning the languages, the older languages. He had no interest in that. He just wanted to be with people. And so he ended up working for this Belgium Evangelical Association. And they sent him to what their expectation was, is that he would stand behind a podium and preach this gospel, because these poor, just in the dark coal miners would just be so hungry for the gospel. Well, he very much lived a life of solidarity with those suffering. And he got deeper and deeper into their lives and living with them and understanding their lives, and literally lived a life of empathy that led him to compassion. He was known for going into the coal mines with the workers, and you know, they hardly ever saw the light of day, and their working conditions were so poor that it led to very poor health for many of them, and they were paid so poorly, many of them were quite hungry. So no medical care, terrible working conditions, and just truly desperate and destitute. And he became an advocate to talk to the coal mine owners to get them better working conditions. And he became a voice of peace, because the coal miners were starting to organize and were going to set the coal mines on fire. And he was the only one that they would listen to. And he's noted for saying that when you resort to brutality, you lose everything that is good about your humanity. And so he was the only one they would listen to. And so it was shocking to me to then see that when the Belgium Evangelical Association came and checked on him, they were appalled. They couldn't tell a difference between him and the coal miners, and they did not like this. They wanted him to kind of stay behind the pulpit, and he was getting into their lives. I mean, he was known for giving away his bed sheet to use to rip up the sheet, to wrap bandages, to bandage those that are hurting and suffering. And he, when people would talk to him, like, you're giving away your shirt, you're giving away your bed sheet, what are you doing? And he's like, how can we not follow through and do that when the Good Samaritan did far more? So he lived a life of solidarity with the suffering and went to great lengths to be with them in that suffering. And this whole story just fascinated me, because it's like, here is a person who gave everything to suffer with. And it was such an example of empathy. And I could immediately start to see why Henry Nouwen was so fascinated with his life. And did you know, actually, Henry Nouwen, when he was buried, a symbol of his love for Vincent van Gogh and his work was covered in sunflowers. His coffin was covered in sunflowers. I thought that was just such an interesting detail. So all this led me to another rabbit trail of empathy, because the podcast I did recently, and if you haven't heard it, you should go back and listen to it, What's Alive in Me is What's Alive in You, is basically a tool for empathy. And it's something I fantasize a lot about like all these arguments that we're having in our culture could be absolutely transformed and take us to a whole new place. It could give a puzzle that is a totally different picture if we just add empathy. Empathy could change it all. And when I was researching, I found that empathy, over the last 40 years, researchers have been measuring it, and it is in a steady decline over the last 40 years. Empathy is just dropping. And over the last 10 years, it's the steepest decline yet. And so here we are. We have this hyper-individualized society. We have our silos of our own rightness, and we are losing the ability to see with the eyes of another, to listen with the ears of another, and to feel the heart of another. And it feels so crucial to bridge the divide. So, you know, we really do see something of beauty together that we cannot see alone. We see something when we're connected to others that we cannot see when we're isolated, because every person we have ever come into contact with knows something we don't know, has suffered something we have not suffered, and understands something we do not understand. See, I think we have just completely missed how much of a universe of individuality is that is inside of others. You know, I've heard it once that the best gift that we can give to our intimate partners is to let them show up completely brand new as themselves every time. Because see, we just put people in boxes and we assume certain patterns, and some of those are true, but some of them aren't. I mean, if you've been married, I mean, I've been married 21 years, you know that you can endlessly be getting to know someone. So what I want to do is I want to talk about the benefits today of empathy, both to others and to ourselves. Almost, you know, one of the YouTube videos, a TED Talk I listened to, I think his name was Roman. We'll link it in the show notes. He talked about a call for an empathy revolution. And this was very inspiring to me, because I can see how the times I can do it, it truly can transform relationships. And the times I fail at it, it truly can hurt deeply the relationships. And I'm sure we all have those exact same experiences. And the truth is, some of us are born with more empathy than others, but empathy is a skill that all of us can build. And empathy costs us nothing except for letting go of our armor and our defenses and our certainties, really our ego. And what do we get in exchange for offering empathy? Number one, 40 seconds of empathy can save a life. Let me say that again. 40 seconds of empathy can save a life. So there was a doctor, an ICU doctor, who was talking about incredible levels of compassion burnout that he was experiencing. And he knew he wasn't alone. He knew many of his coworkers were in the same position. And he was starting to research compassion. And he was so struck by an article he had read about two buses that had collided, and due to just miraculous care by the doctors, just and nurses, that quite a few more than they had expected their lives were able to be saved. And when these two bus survivors that were interviewed almost 20 years later, what they remembered about their experience in the hospital was a lack of compassion, a lack of being treated like a human. And this really hurt him, given that this is his life's work. And so he went to school even further on what does it take? Like, what does it take to, you know, we all think we don't have enough time to offer compassion. We're all going and doing so fast, not just in healthcare, but in this world. Like, we have such a do more, earn more, produce more, get to the next level mentality, the American way, right? That we think we don't have time for compassion. And so he kept digging, because he was a researcher also by profession, in addition to being an ICU doctor. And he came across a study with cancer patients. And what they did is they found that 40 seconds of compassion in a script that included things like this, that the provider would offer to the cancer patient. It would say things like, "I am so sorry this is happening. I am with you on this journey. I'll be with you every step of the way. And I know this must be really hard for you. You stop me if you have any questions, because I want to support you as best as I can." So that was the basic idea of the script. And at the beginning and at the end of the conversations on treatment, the provider would say this script, and they timed it. It was 40 seconds. And in the research, they saw that those cancer patients fared better in their treatment than those that did not receive this 40 seconds of compassion. And what he then did is launched his own experiment. He was the test subject, and he wanted to see if he could transform his own life by offering 40 seconds of compassion to each patient. And what he found was, is of course, he knew it would benefit the patients, but what he found was, is it changed his life. It changed his motivation. And I think that's the part that hooks my curiosity the most, because we often think giving empathy, we don't have the energy in us. We just cannot go there. But quite paradoxically, it gives us energy. Quite paradoxically, it's a giving that gives right back. So this is something that, for whatever reason, I do know that it probably comes more naturally to me than others, but it's also something I absolutely work on. One of the books that I read suggested that experiential empathy experiences are important and that you need curiosity and wonder. And what it was describing was that every conversation that you come into contact, you have an opportunity to offer empathy, to move the conversation behind, you know, beyond surface levels, to let down your walls and go to things that matter, because you have in that moment a chance to experience someone else's perspective in the world, their puzzle piece on the world. One of my favorite quotes about this is, could a greater miracle take place than for us to look through each other's eyes for an instant? And this is where it got me so excited. I'm like, really? It is like this, like, instant travel and vacation to another universe. And it costs nothing. You don't have to buy a plane ticket for empathy. But if you decide to be curious and to have a sense of wonder, you can literally get and learn and know something you didn't know before that conversation. So they were talking about these experiences, the experiential experiences of wonder. And I thought about how that really is a practice that I think I did it out of escaping boredom. It was a ticket out of boredom. Like, and it's just become a practice of who I am. Like, whether it's the librarians we see when we go to the library or the lifeguards we see when we go to the pool, I'm always looking for the opportunity to be curious with wonder and just get a snapshot of someone else's life. I remember one winter, it was a particularly humdrum, sloggy week, and my older kids stayed here at the house to finish up their math, and I took the younger kids who were starting to bounce off the walls for a walk. And at the time, at the front of our neighborhood, they were doing a lot of construction. And I mean, I am always thinking our next lesson is just a conversation away. And there's so much you can get because one person, you get all their research and all their passion and all their perspectives. You get a peek at their puzzle piece, and together you can see something different. And so I had stumbled, I was hoping, because in our old house, we one time, the lumber was being delivered for a fence, and we got like a 30-minute adventure just talking to this lumbery delivery person and just hearing more about their life and hearing more about what they do and how it works and all the things. And I love those moments because it literally is a ticket to somewhere else inside of them. You get this peek inside of their perspective, their puzzle piece. So anyway, so we were at the front of the neighborhood and this construction was going on. And I was like, just hoping it would be like the lumber delivery situation. And sure enough, we stumbled upon a particularly open general contractor who was waiting on some people to come anyway. So he had some downtime, and he ended up touring us through the entire construction site. And he was super passionate about talking about, like, giving the kids numbers. Like, he loved numbers. And so he loved describing to them what different things cost. And I thought, well, look at this, what a tremendous math lesson. And their eyes are, of course, wide open because they're just like measuring how tall they are compared to the tires on some of the equipment. And it's like, these are the moments. Instead of a sponsor for today's podcast, we actually want to bring your attention to a GoFundMe that you will find a link to in the show notes. First off, I want to say thank you to so many friends and family members that have gathered around in love for our friend. And if you want more information on how to get in this love action for a single mom who lost her job here in Charlotte very unexpectedly and suddenly, and did not receive her last paycheck, our The moms on our street have just organized a GoFundMe just to surround her to cover the first month of expenses until she can get on her feet into a new job. So check the show note link out if you want to join in on this love fun. I think people see that about me and they're like, oh, she's absolutely an extrovert. But the thing is, I've always been confused about extrovert versus introvert, because to me, if someone else is open to a conversation, I'm absolutely an extrovert. If they're open for it going to a totally different place, a place of meaning, I'm an extrovert. If there's walls and there's no ability to get the conversation to a place that matters, count me an introvert. Anyways, back to sharing a little bit more about just what we get in exchange for giving up our ego and giving up our certainties, what we get when we offer empathy. So we get this experiential experience. We get to peek at somebody else's puzzle piece on this world, because no one sees things the same way as we do. Another thing that really, really hooked my attention was there's a program called The Roots of Empathy. It started in Canada, and I believe there's been, goodness, I think 500,000 children that have gone through this. And listen to what this program is. It's basically a baby that comes into the classroom on a regular basis. And the program started in kindergarten, but it actually built all the way up through the eighth grade. The baby comes in once a month to the classroom, and the children all sit around and observe the baby. The baby becomes the teacher. And the baby becomes the springboard of exploring empathy. So there's questions like, oh, well, why do you think the baby is frustrated right now? Like, what do you think the baby's trying to do? And wow, what can the baby do this month that the baby couldn't do last month? And oh, why do you think the baby was smiling? And this is so interesting to me too, because I've long since been fascinated with the fact that, I mean, I think my addiction to children is the fact that children have no armor. They're always open for connection. No armor. They're armorless. So this baby often would be drawn to children in the classroom that would be sad or withdrawn and would go towards them. And so it'd be an opportunity to explore what the children felt like for the baby to reach out after them. So there was just all kinds of springboards of conversation to focus on empathy. And the research shows that aggression in the classroom went down, bullying incidences went down, academics went up, and the relationships in the classroom improved. And it's like, ah, that's no surprise, right? The baby is the lesson. It absolutely was so cool to read about. And I'm working my way through the book on the Roots of Empathy book on this program. Anyways, and this hooked my attention too, because I remember when most of my kids were little and I was homeschooling, like the common topic with other families in the same situation, whether it was at a homeschool conference or a park day, is like, what are you going to do with the toddler and the preschooler so they don't sabotage the math lesson or sabotage the writing instruction? It's like, you know, you can see this dynamic, right? Like you're trying to do a handwriting lesson with a second grader and you've got a preschooler who's like throwing Play-Doh across the table, right? And I mean, I've read so many books and blogs and attended so many lessons on, you know, just, I guess this is my perfectionistic one wing coming out. Like, let me find all the solutions on what to do with the toddler and the preschooler. And you know, the best advice I ever got on that was that the baby is the lesson. The preschooler is the lesson. That there is no writing lesson, no math lesson that is more important than modeling and showing how do we respond to those less vulnerable, less powerful, that have less voice in this community. Like how we respond to them is the lesson. And I mean, I imperfectly apply that, but it's something that's always hit me. It's like how I'm going to respond to your interruption, how I'm going to respond to your needs of being seen and your needs for being a part of the whole learning process is going to set the tone for how everybody else responds. So also, empathy leads to creativity. Vincent van Gogh, after that period of working in the coal mines and then being fired by the Belgium Evangelical Mission Association, he went through a period of deep depression. A lot of the information we have about this that Carol reports on in her book that she got from Henry Nouwen's notes from the class is from 900 letters he wrote to his brother Theo, and he went through a period of great depression. And also after that, he started to really nourish the seeds he worked on it as a child within his art. This absolutely hooks me. Like, so of course I then had to research, like, are there research links to creativity and empathy? And sure enough, there are. Empathy requires attention. And empathy and attention are so interrelated, and creativity is birthed out of that. And then I thought, isn't that fascinating? Because I was thinking about, or recently a friend of mine was talking about how she was reading that, you know, one way to look at time is linear, but other cultures may look at time as cyclical. And that, you know, she was referencing just cycles. And this hit home because last winter I read this book called Wintering, and I really loved the value that it placed on what's done in winter cannot be done in spring. And it drawed my attention more to even, you know, trees, like what's done in winter. If you look closely, these trees that look dead, right? There really is new life starting to be nourished. And so it only makes sense that we would be built the same way. These periods of winter in our life, that spring always comes, and that there's work being done in us in those periods of winter that'll come right out in spring. So I just love seeing those connections in both nature and the research, because I really do believe that empathy is this missing magic ingredient in our discourse, our divisive discourse today. Because I've seen how the times that I can grab a hold of it and practice it, it can transform my own relationships. And joy is hidden in empathy. You know, research shows that empathy connects us with others more deeply. And research also shows that the more connections we have brings joy, and it also decreases anxiety and depression. Now, who in this 2021 pandemic world does not need another tool for decreasing anxiety and depression? It's so easy to stay in our trenches of certainty and to put up our scarecrows of this is how I know the world to be, and I'm going to scare it away, and I'm convinced I know all the things. And there are hidden gems of joy and creativity and energy inside 40 seconds of empathy. So, in closing, I wanted to go over some tools in case this caught your attention. So empathy requires non-dualistic thinking. You know, if I want to have empathy for someone I don't know or don't understand, it cannot come from a place of me approaching that person with they're right or they're wrong, I'm right. This decision they made was bad, I know the better way. Like, you can't, you know, the normal way the human mind works is breaking up in things that we like it, we don't. That's right, that's wrong. She's good, he's bad. Like, our mind is constantly making these dualistic judgments. But contemplation and non-dualistic thinking has to happen to give empathy. You know, there's a quote by Bill Bullard that perfectly describes this. He says, opinion is really the lowest form of human knowledge. It requires no accountability, no understanding. The highest form of knowledge is empathy, for it requires us to suspend our egos and live in another's world. Bill Bullard. It's so easy to assume we understand someone else's piece of this puzzle. And most often, our assumptions are so far off. Because every single person, no matter how well we think we know them, they know something we don't. And every single person that we come across has something in their world that would fascinate us and strike us in new ways. And all we need to give is curiosity and the suspension of our certainty of our understanding of them, and enter into that place of empathy. So non-dualistic thinking, if you want to explore that more, a book that I recommend is Naked Now by Richard Rohr. And another great tool is there's an empathy library. We'll put that in the show notes. And another great tool is viewing every conversation as an empathy museum. Every conversation. you know, that is my hope and my vision and my dream for this podcast is like, I intentionally want to bring people that have perspectives, which everyone does, but that have perspectives that are different than mine. So I hope this podcast will also be a resource for your own empathy museum. Also, the book Nonviolent Communication, I mentioned it in the podcast of What is Alive in You is Alive in Me. Listen to that episode if you haven't yet, and this piques your interest. In closing, a quote from Vincent van Gogh, could it not be the case that if one loves something, one sees it better and more truly than if one did not love it? Vincent van Gogh. I just love that because the first thing that caught my attention on, I think, Vincent van Gogh's most popular piece of work is Starry Night. And I just found out that that is actually in New York. I would have assumed it was in Italy. I don't know why, but I was wrong. So, but that is his most famous piece. And it was painted while he was in an asylum for mental health. And what I am so fascinated, what particularly fascinates me about that painting is I had read that the things that he illustrated and the way that the stars were moving, the actual movement was something that technology-wise was not available to people without the technology to see it until many, many years later. But this attention and study and careful wonder and curiosity at the night sky allowed him to replicate this creativity creatively in his art. And it's like, oh, what we could do, like what more is possible if we could look long with great attention at another. And it reminds me of, I have a friend who is really into puzzles right now. And she was doing a puzzle that had just looked like just a couple of basic colors. And she was like Marco Polo. And she's like, maybe I'm in too deep. This might not be the project for me because they all just look the same. And she said, then the thing is actually the longer I looked at it, the more I could tell there is such a difference in all these different shades of green. And then the longer I looked at it, I could tell, okay, there's a really big difference in all these shades of blue. What a beautiful metaphor for people. So often we can be like, oh, okay, yeah, they're this political group. They're all the same. Oh, there they are. This Enneagram number, they're all the same. But the truth is, we would see the granularity of difference if we suspended our certainties and our egos and wanted to take a free trip into the universe inside of another one and inside of another person, inside of their perspective, inside of their life. And who knows? We could see more joy, more creativity, more connection, less depression, less anxiety, and a new picture, a new view, a new beautiful view. Oh, one final resource. The account Soft White Underbelly on YouTube. You can see interviews from people that you typically would not come into, I typically would not have the chance to get to know in my everyday life. So you might see an interview from a crack addict that lives on Skid Row, or you might see an interview from a pimp that lives in New York City. You might see interviews from a homeless person that is transgender. You get to the person interviewing, I think they are extremely, extremely gifted and skilled at empathic interviewing. And you get a chance to take a ticket inside the universe of another person because you get to hear their story. You get to see it through their eyes, hear through their ears. And it really is both beautiful and heartbreaking because you get this peek and you start to see, to me, what struck me is like how not different we are, how not different. There was one particular interview and it was like she was describing this drug addiction and how, and really the questions that led up to her revealing about her drug addiction, she was talking about her parents had a drug addiction. And I just thought, my goodness, like really, you know, I've got this like people-pleasing addiction that I have kicked. And it's like, I learned that in my first family. And those are patterns I learned in response to my environment. And here this person has just learned these patterns in response to their environment. But yet I just happen to have a more socially acceptable and less life damaging addiction. And it just really is striking because we are really so similar on this emotional level. Like every human wrestles. So anyways, that's one resource and one just to see just the beauty of others. And to me, it's like a call to like, what more can we do? Like, this is what our culture is doing to those without the power that are literally learning from their parents who learn from their parents. Like, what more can we do? Which is not an easy question, no easy answers, but certainly a question I don't want to turn away from. And I am going to link to an interview with Alok, a transgender person that brought me so much joy to hear their heart. Because that issue, I realized there was a conversation that came up a few weeks ago within our family, and I realized that I needed to go to school on empathy because I don't want to have opinions. I want to try to live that quote of, you know, the Bill Bullard quote about is opinion is really the lowest form of human knowledge and it requires no accountability, no understanding, and that the highest form of knowledge is empathy. I want that to me is like putting love in action. Then love is not just this intellectual exercise of my opinions and my dualistic ideas and my certainties. It's like experiencing and trying to understand the life of another. And I'm going to link to Alok's interview because I was so gifted by hearing Alok's interview, because what a gift Alok gave to be open about just the experience of being a transgender person. And it was a layup given of empathy and understanding. And it got my husband and I talking, because we're like, you know, at the time of the Bible, for Jesus to go and use women in the ministry was like so scandalous, right? Like there's so many reports of Jesus with women at the well and had women in integral places in his ministry. And, you know, was living and working with Mary and Martha, like, or living in ministry and going to their home. And it's like, that was so scandalous, because I heard a quote once that at the time, the Jewish priests believed that it was better to burn scripture than to waste your time on sharing that with a woman. It's like there was such a disdain in that patriarchal culture for women and such a hatred. And yet Jesus had such a radical different approach and valued women. And I thought, who is like that today in our culture? Who is ostracized? And it's like how Jesus used women and spoke through them. And to me, I just heard so much love radiating from this podcast. So I'll link that there, because I think it would be something that many of you might enjoy.
You're a young spirit, an old soul with a new chance to grow. I can't stop to compare your love to the size of your heart. If people saw the road you've been down, they would know.